Part 5. The Tale of Haga. The prince had gone but a short way from the castle when he felt a gentle finger touch his elbow.
"It is the Goleks,"
said the Goleks proudly.
"The only Goleks in the world."
The prince was in no mood for the old man's gaiety and cheer. The Goleks did not seem wonderful to him now, and even his indescribable hat was suddenly describable.
"The Duke thinks you are not so wise as he thinks you think you are," he said.
The Goleks smiled.
"I think he is not so wise as he thinks I think he is,"
he said.
"I was there. I know the terms. I had thought that only dragonflies and angels think of time, never having been an angel or a dragonfly."
"How were you there?"
the prince said in surprise.
"I am Listen,"
the Golic said.
"Or at any rate he thinks I am. Never trust a spy you cannot see. The Duke is lamer than I am old, and I am shorter than he is cold. But it comes to you with some surprise that I am wiser than he is wise."
The prince's courage began to return.
"I think you are the most remarkable man in the world," he said.
"Who thought not so a moment since knows not the apple from the quince,"
the Golic said. He scowled.
"We now have only 80 hours to find 1,000 gems,
he said.
"You said that you had other plans than one,"
the prince reminded him.
"What plans?"
the Goleks asked.
"You didn't say,"
said Zorn. The Goleks closed his eyes and clasped his hands.
"There was a treasure ship that sank not more than 40 hours from here,"
he said.
"But, come to think of it, the Duke ransacked the ship and stole the jewels."
"So much," sighed Zorn, "for that."
The Goleks thought again.
"If there were hail,"
he said,
"and we could stain the hail with blood, it might turn into rubies."
"There is no hail,"
said Zorn. The Goleks sighed.
"So much,"
he said,
"for that."
"The task is hard,"
said Zorn,
"and can't be done."
"I can do a score of things that can't be done,"
the Goleks said.
"I can find the thing I cannot see, and see a thing I cannot find. The first is time, the second is a spot before my eyes. I can feel a thing I cannot touch, and touch a thing I cannot feel. The first is sad and sorry, the second is your heart. What would you do without me? Say, nothing."
"Nothing,"
said the prince.
"Good. Then you are helpless, and I'll help you. I said I had another plan than one, and I have just remembered what it is. There is a woman on this isle who'd have some 80 years, and she is gifted with the strangest gift of all. For when she weeps, what do you think she weeps?"
"Tears,"
said Zorn.
"Jewels,"
said the Goleks. The prince stared at him.
"But that is too remarkable to be,"
he said.
"I don't see why,"
the Goleks said.
"Even the lowly oyster makes his pearls without the use of eyes or hands or any tools, and pearls are jewels. The oyster is a blob of glup, but a woman is a woman."
The prince thought of the toadal and felt a small, cold feeling in his guggle.
"Where does this wondrous woman dwell?"
he asked. The old man groaned.
"Over mountain, over stream, by the way of storm and thunder, in a hut so high or deep, I never can remember which. The naked eye can't see it."
He stood up.
"We must be on our way,"
he said.
"It will take us 90 hours, more or less, to go and come. It's this way, or it's that way. Make up my mind."
"How can I?"
asked the prince.
"You have a rose,"
the Golic said.
"Hold it in your hand."
The prince took out the rose and held it in his hand, and its stem slowly turned and stopped.
"It's this way,"
cried the Goleks, and they started off in the direction the stem of the rose had pointed out.
"I will tell you the tale of Haga,"
said the Goleks. "When Haga was 11, he began, "and picking cherries in the woods one day, and asphodel, she came upon the good King Gwaine of Yarrow, with his foot caught in a wolf trap.
"Weep for me, maiden,"
said the king,
"for I am ludicrous and laughable with my foot caught in this trap. I am no longer Ert, for I have lost my Ertia. By twiddling my fingers or clapping my hands, I have often changed the fate of men. But now I cannot get my foot loose from this thing."
"I have no time for tears,"
the maiden said. She knew the secret of the trap and was about to free the fettered foot when a farmer from a nearby farm began to laugh. The king beshrewed him and his wife and turned them into grasshoppers, creatures that look as if their feet were caught in traps even when they aren't.
Lo, the maid has freed my foot,
the king exulted, seeing that she had.
But it is numb and feels like someone else's foot, not mine.
The maiden took off his shoe and rubbed his foot until it felt like his, and he could put it down. And for her kindness, the grateful king gave her the power to weep jewels when she wept, instead of tears. When the people learned of the strange gift the king had given Haga, they came from leagues around, by night and day, in warm and winter weather, to make her sad and sorry. Nothing tragic happened, but she heard of it and wept. People came with heavy hearts and left with pearls and rubies. Paths were paved with pearls and rivers ran with rubies. Children played with sapphires in the streets, and dogs chewed opals. Every peacock had at least 9 diamonds in its gizzard, and one, cut open on St. Wisto's Day, had 38. The price of stones and pebbles rose, the price of gems declined, until by making Haga weep you could be hanged and fined. In the end, the jewels were melted in a frightful fire by order of the king.
I will make her weep myself one day each year,
the king decreed.
And thus and hence the flow of gems will make some sense and have some point and balance.
But alas, and but alack, the maid could weep no more at any tale of tragedy or tribulation. Damsels killed by dragons left her cold, and broken hearts, and children lost, and love denied. She never wept by day or night, in warm or winter weather. She grew to be 16, and 26, and 34,
and 48, and 52.
And now she waits at 88 for me and you.
I hope,
the Golic said,
that this is true. I make things up, you know.
The young prince sighed and said,
I know you do. If Haga weeps no more, why should she weep for you?
The Golic thought it over.
I feel that she is frail and fragile. I trust that she is sad and sorry. I hope that she is neither dead nor dying. I'll think of something very sad to tell her, very sad and lonely. Take out your rose. I think we're lost.
They had become tangled in brambles by now, and the trees of the forest they had entered were tall and thick. Thorns began to tear the prince's raiment. Lightning flashed, and thunder rolled, and all paths vanished. The prince took out the rose and held it in his hand. The stem began to turn and twist, and pointed.
Around this way,
the Golic said.
It's lighter here.
He found a narrow path that led straight onward. As they walked along the path, the Golic's leading, they met a jackadandy whose clothes were torn and tattered.
I told my tales to Haga,
said the man.
But Haga weeps no more. I told her tales of lovers lost in April. I told her tales of maidens dead in June. I told her tales of princes fed to geese. I even told her how I lost my youngest niece.
This is sad,
the Golic said.
And getting sadder.
The way is long,
the torn man said.
And getting longer. The road goes uphill all the way and even farther. I wish you luck,
he said.
You'll need it.
He disappeared in brambles. The only light in the forest came from lightning, and when it flashed, they watched the rose and followed where it pointed. This brought them on the second day into a valley. They saw a jack-o'-lent approaching, his clothes all torn and tattered.
I told my tales to Haga,
said the man.
But Haga weeps no more. I told her tales of lovers lost at sea and drowned in fountains. I told her tales of babies lost in woods and lost on mountains. She wept not,
said the jack-o'-lent.
The way is dark and getting darker.
The hut is high, and even higher.
I wish you luck. There is none.
He vanished in the briars. The brambles and the thorns grew thick and thicker in a ticking thicket of bickering crickets. Farther along and stronger bonged the gongs of a throng of frogs, green and vivid on their lily pads. From the sky came the crying of flies, and the pilgrims leaped over a bleating sheep creeping knee-deep in a sleepy stream in which swift and slippery snakes slid and slithered silkily, whispering sinful secrets. A comet whistled through the sky. And by its light they saw the hut of Haga, high on Haga's hill.
If she is dead, there may be strangers there,
the Gullock said.
How many hours do we have left?
The prince demanded.
If we can make her weep within the hour,
the Gullock said,
we'll barely make it.
I hope that she's alive and sad,
said Zorn.
I feel that she has died,
the Gullock sighed.
I feel it in my stomach. You better carry me. I'm weary.
Zorn of Zorna picked the Goloks up and carried him.